America's favorite game, but at what cost?
My name is Annalisa.
And my name's Courtney, and you're listening to State of the Pod!
Oh my god. So pro football, particularly the NFL, has been a staple of like American culture for over 150 years, which is crazy.
It's crazy. Like, that's longer than...
That's longer than I've been alive.
Right? Me too.
That's wow. A really long time. Yeah, yeah. And so, like, the NFL, there's, like, other football leagues, like, smaller ones.
Yeah, like, XFL, AFL.
Yeah, but, like, yeah. They're, like, irrelevant, like, compared to, like, the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, there was other leagues before, like, when football was created, but they got absorbed by the NFL, like, the 49ers
yeah.
and, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but basically, the NFL, like, it dominates American entertainment networks, right? Like, it's... like the industry of NFL, like of the NFL, it's like overpowering like basketball and baseball, which is crazy because like baseball used to be known as like America's favorite pastime or whatever, right? And then football came along and it's just been like, it's been crazy. Yeah. It's so crazy that the lowest valued team, like that's a part of the NFL, is still valued at $5 billion.
You know, I wouldn't even care.
Right.
I'll take the $5 billion.
Because, yeah, that's insane. The highest value team, I think, it was the Cowboys, and they were valued at, like, $13 billion.
The Cowboys were the highest?
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Right, because they're not even that good right now.
Yeah, I think it's mainly just... yeah, the Cowboys are, like, so... I think it's just, like, because, like, they're
historically,
culture.
Yeah, they were, like...
They're, like...
The cheerleaders.
They are the team. Like, they are the football team. Like, they're...
Right.
They're that girl, right? And so that's why I feel like they're super high. But, yeah. The industry is, like, just so large. Like, football, like, as a whole. And it goes, like, further than, like, just entertainment. Than, like, what you watch on, like, TV on Sundays, right? Football averages over 200 injuries per year. It's ignited national civil rights waves, like genuine movements. It's also created a dangerous monopoly on the sports entertainment economy.
Interesting.
And yeah.
How?
The NFL really just controls everything, if you think about it. But yeah.
That's crazy. So should we get into it?
Let's get into it!
Okay, so. Basically, what we're going to do, we're going to talk about the economic consequences and implications of the NFL, mm-hmm. and I guess football in general. Yeah. We're going to talk about the societal implications of football, and then also the medical implications. So should we get started with the economical implications?
Let's hear it.
One would assume, and I think that it's a very common, I guess, what's the misconception, mm-hmm. that football... and just, I guess, sports in general is a pretty socialist mechanism because in the beginning of football, all of these owners, they were willing to lose money in order to make the sport of football and the NFL grow.
Right.
Okay? But, and I guess you can also say that it's, like, socialist in the fact that, like, you know, like, the draft, the worst team gets the first pick. And so a lot of things are kind of, like, fair that way. Mm-hmm. But that's not true.
Okay. Why is that not true? Tell me more.
Yeah, let's see. So, essentially, everyone was like, oh, yeah, the NFL, it's, like, basically Marxist because... you know, they're, like, willing to lose all this money in order to, like, grow the game and stuff, and they weren't trying to make money in the beginning,
right.
But obviously that's not the case anymore. According to taxfoundation.org, there's probably around 73% of venue construction costs that are paid for by taxpayers in America.
That's so much.
I know.
Wow.
So, essentially, and when you think about it, these NFL teams, they're making so much money. They've been making so much money. Anytime you see a new stadium get built, it was probably paid for a majority by the taxpayers, which is kind of crazy, mm-hmm. when you think about the fact that they're making millions of dollars each year. They really don't need it.
Yeah.
They don't need the money.
Right.
But nevertheless, the taxpayers are paying for it. And majority of the time, I guess you could kind of say, oh, it's bringing jobs into the community, this and that. But it's not really worth it compared to how many jobs are in, you know, a stadium versus the cost. You know what I mean? And so that's something to look at. It takes out a ton of, like, natural agriculture. You need to have, like, huge parking lots for all of the people and, like, figure out how to make sure that, I don't know, plumbing. Who knows how plumbing works? So it puts a large effect on the communities, and then these big corporate, I don't know, millionaires, billionaires at this point, they, like, just as fast as they are willing to do all this construction to put in another freaking stadium, they go to the next city, and then it's like, okay, now we have this huge stadium that's not being put to use, and even sometimes they, like, demolish it. And so basically the reason why this happened was that back in 1966, right, the NFL, they were basically talking with Congress because they wanted to merge with the AFL, which was a smaller football league that you mentioned earlier that was honestly kind of irrelevant.
Right.
And so what happened was lobbyists were able to get a provision into the tax code that said professional football leagues were able to be nonprofit. Yeah.
Interesting.
Right. And so, okay, this tax exemption was originally made for, like, you know, like, real estate boards or, like, business leagues. But now the NFL was able to use it, I guess.
Yeah. Even though they were making millions of dollars compared to...
Right.
Wow.
And so now, not only are they making millions of dollars, but they don't have to pay taxes. So they're taking away taxes from normal people. 70% of these costs to build these huge stadiums are coming from the tax of these people, and they're not even paying taxes to contribute that money back into the community that they are having a stadium in.
It's just taking taxes.
Just absolutely crazy. And so this is important to think about when you keep in mind the fact that this is important to take into account, because we need to keep in mind how much money the NFL is producing and where it's getting its money from. Because when we get into the issues as far as, like, the medical issues goes, and I'm sure the societal issues as well, it's crazy to think that this company, or, like, this whole system that's generating so much revenue and, like, able to generate even more revenue than it would through taxpayer money and not having to pay for these construction costs, it kind of just really... It leaves a sour taste in your mouth when you're like, wow, you're making so much money, but you can't even kind of facilitate the safety of your players. So the commissioner of the NFL, right, his name is Roger Goodell, he said that his goal of profit increase, which I think it's kind of crazy that you have a goal to increase profits when you're already making so much money, but
anyways,
he said his goal was to reach revenues of $25 billion by 2027. He said that in 2010. At 2015, that would have been a 250% increase in revenue. Okay? Now, we're almost close to 2027. Do you want to guess, Annalisa, how much the NFL makes? How much the NFL made in the 2024-2025 season?
I'd say, like, $10 billion.
The total revenue for the 2024 and 25 season surpassed $23 billion.
Oh my god.
So
nonprofit organization.
Right, nonprofit, right. Mind you.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, congrats to Roger Goodell. They're on track to I mean blow past that goal.
Yeah.
But this makes you think, where is this money coming from?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, of course, it's coming from all of the merch that they're selling now. This is crazy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You cannot watch, like, let's say you're an average fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to watch the NFL season. There's no way for you to watch all 32 NFL teams play on one streaming service or on one channel. You have to, like, buy, like, 8 different ones. It's all about money. Yeah, so it's commodified, and then you think about the perspective of the players,
right,
who, God forbid, they have a bad game, right, one bad game. All of a sudden, they have millions of fans harassing them. Mm-hmm. They have the owners coming to them, trying to get them fired or traded to another team, because at the end of the day, they just want to make more money.
Right.
That's so scary. And then you also think about all of these players who are making millions of dollars as well. But then, did you do any research into, like, the fines that they get?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, God forbid. Wait, what were you gonna say?
Like, it's, like, fines for, like, violating the code of conduct or, like...
Yeah, and then you read
into... uniform violations, too.
Right, and you read into it, and you're like, what the heck? Like, this is, like, kind of crazy. They'll do celebrations after they get touchdowns, and then, boom, $10,000 out of your paycheck. And I guess it's a small amount if you're making millions of dollars, but also it's, like...
It really shows, like, the greed of the NFL. Right. And, like, the lengths that they'll go.
It's absolutely crazy just to keep that, because we know where the money's going. And so, another point I think I want to bring up is the fact that, as far as, like, media goes and how these athletes are portrayed, it's such a common thing these days to look at a player who has a lot of, like, jewelry and has, like, expensive cars and stuff and see that as, like, a negative thing or say that they're in it for the wrong reasons or call it, like, you know, trashy or ghetto. Mm-hmm. I know that Shador Sanders, do you know Shador Sanders?
No, tell me.
He's, his dad, Deion Sanders, was a very popular football player back in the day. And so, obviously, he's grown up, I guess you could say he's like a nepo baby of football.
Right.
And so, his dad coached him in college and everything, and they were pretty good. He was a pretty good quarterback. And so, obviously, he had a little bit of an ego, and he was very confident in his abilities. He always played the game with, like, a, you know, super expensive watch on, super big chain. Yeah. And so a lot of people said that he ended up falling so far in the draft, and it was kind of crazy because he was a good player.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, oh, it's because of his attitude and all he cares about is the money and stuff. But it's kind of like, maybe, but also that's what the whole league is about.
Right, like, right.
That's all they care about. That's all the commissioner cares about, that's all these owners care about. So why can't the players also show their care and their want to have money? That's why they're doing it. I mean, like, in some ways, it's their job.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, really, like, at the end of the day, like, football is their job. So, like, God forbid they have a personality, like, to go along with, like...
God forbid they want some nice jewelry.
Right.
A and little tennis bracelet, I don't know.
It's so crazy. Like, and it's so crazy because even though, like, the NFL is, like, we've already talked about, like, so greedy for money, all of that, they also have this, like, kind of desire to control the image of, like, their players.
Wow.
No, but it's, like, so crazy because they kind of, like, make, like, the player's personality and who they are as a person outside of football, like, outside of, like, being on the field, they make it, like, something that's, be like, being able to be sold, like, in games,
commodified.
Yeah. They're, like, commodifying the player's image, right? And so, like, games like Madden.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the, like,
and then the college football too, the version that just came out.
Yeah.
That's
crazy. And people love it because they're like, oh my gosh, look at my favorite player. This is his personality. Yeah. And I can, like, I like his personality. Mm-hmm. And
I can also see how that gets crazy, especially with, like, the social media stuff coming out. Yeah. I know anytime I scroll on TikTok, I always see, like, the Chargers football team, and they're always doing, like, challenges with the players.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, it's like fun and quirky, but that's also a way that they're making more money.
Exactly.
So it's like,
it's like, so, like, really, like, what's real, like, what's
it all leads
PR
back to? The
it's all money.
It's
really
all money.
So basically what happens is that when a player's image, like their personality, whatever, when that gets, like, commodified, it becomes something that's called, like, image rights. So the player, like, themselves they have image rights to, obviously, themselves, but then, like, when they sign with, like, a club or, like, with the team, then their image rights get kind of shared, like, with that club or team.
Yeah.
And so that club or team now controls them. So it's like, you have to do, like, you have to
act this way, do this, you can't say this.
Exactly, like, you have to, like, present this image to kind of, like, represent our club, because we own your image rights anyways. Yeah. So, yeah, and it's really crazy, because if that player, like, tries to, like, leave the club, they have to go through, like, the legal process of, like, getting their image rights, like, taken away from that club or that team, and, like, transferred, and it's this whole thing. It's, like, really just crazy, right? And so, back on, like, how, what happens, like, when the team or the club owns their image, there then becomes, like, this kind of acceptable, quote-unquote, like, personality that the players can have. So they won't explicitly fire the person, right? Mm-hmm. But they'll let them get harassed, and they won't right? Like,
they'll let the public harass
them. Exactly. Like, the protection of the players, last thing on the NFL's mind, okay? Last thing on Mr. Goodell's mind, okay? But so basically, we all, I'm sure we all remember when Colin Kaepernick, he kneeled during during the national anthem in 2016. He wasn't, like, disciplined directly per se, but he was very, very harshly criticized by
higher ups. It was crazy.
It was crazy. Like, not only was the public going at him, and it was just this whole thing, like, people in the NFL, like, leaders, were criticizing him for his actions and for showing his support for an organization that he cared about.
Yeah.
To the point where he left, he ended his contract. But, like, that's the thing. It's, like, do we, like, they just really either,
they,
like,
had
they just
no
don't care
for him. Yeah, yeah. Because it was affecting how much money they were making. People were threatening to not support the San Francisco 49ers anymore. And so it's, like, what's important is the, like, health and mental capacity of these players important to you at all?
No, because listen to this. Okay, so there were players who, like, also participated in the kneeling, because then it became a movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so that kind of ties back to how we talked about how there's been social movements started by football, because football's so, like, it's everywhere. Like, it's become a platform. And so there were other players that were kneeling, like, during the national anthem, like, showing their solidarity and stuff, right? And they didn't find support with their team managers, and it's actually been shown that they would leave, like, their teams and try to go to other teams to try to find some type of manager, like, that would support them, which is crazy, because you would think that all of the team managers for every team would be supportive of their players that make them so much money.
Right.
But no.
The faces of the league.
Right,
really.
Right. It's, yeah, it's crazy. And so, yeah, these social issues ultimately were just ignored by the NFL. They didn't want to, like, be a part of it, right? Like, the football was kind of just the American game. It's not, like, related to anything that's real.
Right. And even though America, I mean, this is politics that's happening in America.
Right, exactly. So it's, like, really, like, what's,
like,
what's
where's the line
on? what's going on, right? So yeah, that leads me to my next point. Like, okay, so NFL doesn't care about social issues, right?
We've established,
well, obviously, they don't care about social issues, because the football draft, it's racist.
Oh, tell me more.
Let's talk. Okay, let's talk. The NFL draft. So, there was a study done. Black players were preferred for any other position other than the quarterback.
Wow. That's crazy when you think about it, because the quarterback is arguably the most important position in football.
Yes.
And also, the quarterback is one of the most protected players on the field at any time.
Exactly.
It's honestly, like, if you hit the quarterback, if you blitz, it's seen as, like, disrespectful in a way, right?
Like, exactly. So, and it's like, we're offering our black players to be,
right, they're allowed to, you know, be in the trenches, doing the dirty work.
It's Oh, it's crazy.
And the quarterbacks are usually some of the most popular players as well.
Oh, yeah, because they're also, like, they have, like, the most importance, like, on the team, yeah. Right? And so, basically, like, historically, like, quarterbacks, like, they lead the team, they yeah. make decisions, they have, like, an intellectual responsibility, okay? Yeah. That's important. Because
remembering all the plays.
Right? Black men, they were not seen as they weren't, like, as intelligent or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they weren't allowed to play the position. And so really, like, it was only until people recognized Black athletic ability that they were able to play the quarterback position. Not because, yeah. oh, you're just on, like, you're just you smart. Have
the yeah the yeah. mental, the cognitive capabilities as well.
Exactly.
But no, you can run fast and exactly. have a lot of muscles.
It was like, oh, well, now you can be the quarterback. So yeah. it was really crazy, actually. And so there was also the Wunderlich test for cognitive ability.
Yes.
Okay. So that's basically like a test that would be administered to people that were going into
in the draft yeah.
right? And it was shown that Black players had underperformance in the Wunderlich test. Okay, and so that was used kind of like as a basis, like, for, oh, well, that's why we don't want to draft them.
Wow.
Right? But, again, the Institute found that the design of the Wunderlich test was engineered in such a way that the white takers of the test mm-hmm. would succeed over.
Wow. So it was, like, racially biased?
Yep.
That's crazy.
So, and it was, again, like, under the guise that, well, Black men are just not as intelligent or something. Like, it was crazy, right? And so, guess when the Wunderlich test was abolished?
When?
2022. We're in 2025. That was only 3 years ago.
Wow, so the whole Black Lives Matter movement happened and they were still administering a racist test?
The NFL didn't care about the Black Lives Matter
yeah,
movement.
I forgot. Silly me. Yeah. That's crazy. And that also reminds me of something.
Okay.
Let me find this stat for you. Anyways, well, as you know, the NFL and football in general mm-hmm. is mostly played, when you look at the statistics, by Black men. Black mm-hmm. men make up majority of college teams, NFL teams, mm-hmm. all of football in general. A lot of these men probably came from, you know, underfunded communities and kind of
underprivileged
backgrounds. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so something that we also should probably take into account is that college football, right? Mm-hmm. That is the main function that's sending people to the NFL, right? It's kind of uncommon for someone to go straight from high school to the NFL. Mm-hmm. That'd be so dangerous. I don't even want to think about that. We'll get into that in a little bit.
Oh my gosh.
But this huge college, that's, if you want to play in the NFL, you're going to go to college, okay? The percentage of NFL players who have graduated college, 50%. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because listen to this. They have them, right? Because it was never about college. It was always about the game.
Yes.
They probably, like, it doesn't matter what you're majoring in.
Yeah.
Or what grade you get, right? Yeah. Because realistically, you can play 1 year of college football and go straight to the draft. Mm-hmm. And now you don't have a degree. Okay. So God forbid something happens and you get injured.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why would's like, you look at things like the Wunderlich test and the stereotypes placed on football players that they're dumb, this, that, and the third, the discrimination between the white and Black players, mm-hmm. and it's like, it was never about academics at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have made this huge machine,
mm-hmm.
right, that is essentially telling these kids in these underprivileged backgrounds that this is the way out, this is the ticket out, this is how you can support your whole family. It was never about a degree.
No.
They don't care.
No.
Okay, because if you can run fast enough, you can catch the ball, that's realistically all you need.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to pay attention to the education side of it, which is also so incredibly important, because then we will get into the medical side of things, but when you're hurt, okay, boom, career-ending injury.
Right. Like, your now body you don't, is your job.
Right. Now you don't have a literal degree. So what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. It's so funny that you bring that up because you would think that there would be hiring discrimination because of this. But there was actually no evidence for discrimination at the point of hire, like, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But when there was callback interviews, then there was discrimination. So it was like, oh, we're going to hire you, but you know that the system is messed up. Like, this is, like,
wow.
The system is going to be prejudiced towards you, and it starts, like, the second they're called back for interviews.
So once they get drafted, these...
They have no way out now.
These black men.
Exactly. Once you sign the contract, it's like, oh, like... Now we can discriminate.
Yeah, we can treat you however we want because we know you're dependent on us to give you money.
Exactly, because they don't have a degree, like you said earlier. They don't have a degree, so it's like, crazy. What are they going to do?
And this was, like, their way out.
Yeah, it's truly, like, just incredibly entrapping. It's very scary. And so, but then for hiring discrimination for non-black or non-white players, so, like, other players of color... Who, by the way, they only make up 5% of the whole, like, entire draft.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's some tea. Like, if we think about, like, all the discrimination, right? Literally, only 2 years ago, the 2023 Super Bowl, okay? That was the first Super Bowl.
With two black quarterbacks? Crazy.
Yeah. So, that was the first time where there was two black, mind you.
Not even 100% black.
That was Super Bowl, like, 50-something.
Yeah.
Right? Like, crazy, okay? And they also, they met in 2025 again. And, you know, if you were in America, just, like, in general at the time, again, the scope of football in itself, then you heard about the halftime show. Okay.
Oh my gosh. You heard about the halftime show. Kendrick Lamar!
Yes. And so they're on that big football field that wanted so badly to keep out political statements or social movements. The most televised show.
Event in history, honestly.
Crazy. Like, and it was extremely political. It was extremely unapologetically black. It was crazy, right?
And you also know who was in attendance.
Donald J. Trump.
The President of the United States.
Not too much on that now.
We'll keep it at that.
We'll keep it cute, yeah.
But that's also interesting to think about is that it's such a popular thing that, like if you said, oh, the President of the United States was going to go watch, like, I don't, like, the thought, like, that's something that they're doing, that sports is this popular, that they're attending, that they're deciding that that's what's important for their schedule to do, is to go to the game.
Like, football's not a game anymore. It's a presidential event. Like,
right.
right. That's insane,
like,
right?
What?
Yeah. And it was so crazy, because this was in, it was February, right? So this was, like, right after the election, okay? We're only a couple months into the new administration, okay? So there were a lot of feelings, and there's a lot of things going on.
And that just shows that how, since sports has such a big part in our culture, it's inherently political.
Yes.
And that's not a bad thing, I feel like.
Yes. It literally, like, it became, like, online, if you were even remotely online during the time of
you didn't even
the
have
Super
to
Bowl.
Like football. You
exactly.
knew about it.
Like, you knew. And, like, it became, like, this kind of celebration of, there was a lot of joy that came from kind of finally being able to recognize that America's greatest sport is also, like, it's inherently black, and it just always has been, and it always will be, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then it gets a little weird, okay?
Okay. As if it hasn't already been so weird.
Oh, it gets strange.
even stranger.
So, right, we're very excited about football, you know. And then people start betting. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Because, you know, what is the logical, like, next step after being so connected to, like, the image of your favorite player, of being told to buy their merch?
Right.
Logically, you gotta start bet, like, you have to start putting your faith in them, right? And you have to start putting your money where your mouth is, okay? Okay. Crazy. So, I feel like we've all kind of seen the rise of sports betting in recent years.
Definitely.
Right? And I always wondered, okay, where is this coming from? Why why is everybody at my school, like, why is every boy at my school now doing, like, sports betting? Like, why
complaining about their parlays?
Yes. Not like, hitting. Why do I know what a parlay is now?
Their,
like,
spread.
Oh my gosh. Crazy, right? And so, actually, there was a ban on sports betting up until 2018.
Yeah.
And so it got lifted in 2018, and that's why we're seeing, like, this giant boom in, like, sports betting. And before the point in 2018, like, when the ban was in, like, action, sports betting wasn't online, so, like, it wasn't as popular, it wasn't as, like, easily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, post-ban, obviously, like, we have, like, the internet space for sports betting to, like, happen, and so just spread like wildfire.
Yeah, it got so crazy.
Oh yeah. And so obviously, like, gambling, it's not a good thing. Okay.
Yeah, right. It can cause addiction.
It's not a good thing, but, you know, even though it causes this addiction, when has the NFL ever cared? Right.
Like,
when have they cared about the well-being of its players or the fans, right? And so it benefits, like, the economy of football. It, like nobody cares because
nobody cares.
Because it's just like, oh, well, now we're making money off of these people that are investing into our brand. It just becomes like this crazy,
like, just a continuous
thing.
Yeah.
Right. And so they have all this money, and, you know, now you would think, like, okay, well, they're making so much money off of the players, right?
Yeah.
So how do they treat their players, okay?
Right.
Not great, right?
As we can imagine.
Let's talk about their uniforms, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm crazy. Just, like, a few rules that they have to follow. They have to keep their jerseys tucked in. Mind you, they're throwing their bodies across the floor.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting, like, punted to the other side of, like, the field. Like, it's...
They're punting the players.
It's... Yeah, they're punting the players. But they're, like, they're doing some crazy stuff, and they gotta keep their jerseys tucked in regardless, right? If they don't keep, like, they'll get fined money, which is crazy. There's a uniform inspector, like, on the field.
Funny.
Like, it's crazy. Like, to make sure that they're always in uniform.
Right.
Okay?
And it's, like, your first thought would be, like, oh, this is for safety. But... we're gonna get into it later.
Yeah.
But is it really for safety?
Is it really?
Because I don't think it is. Because you're letting them be in harm's way in a lot of other ways. But
oh, it's, you know, it's
about control.
Crazy. But you know, obviously, like, the fashions, like how, like, uniforms are designed, it changed, like, with the times. That's important. But nobody cares about the helmets. Right?
Nobody cares about
the
helmets.
We care about
the
fashion, and we care about, oh, how, like, the stockings have to be worn.
Yeah.
They have over 10 categories of rules. Like, that each have their own, like, subcategory.
That's
for
crazy.
Just for uniforms. Like, just for, like,
that's crazy.
Yeah. And so, I was also finding, okay, like, they have all this stuff about, like, their uniforms or whatever, right? So what does the NFL say about safety? Like, how do they...
Right, like, how do these rules ensure that players are being as safe as possible on the field?
Like, what does it have to do with safety? Because...
Right. Shouldn't that be...
We'll get into it, because it really doesn't have much to do with safety, okay?
Lord.
Because, so the NFL, they have this kind of... I think it's a little funny. They're play smart, play safe. Kind of, but that's their motto.
Yeah, play smart, play safe.
Right.
Hmm.
And so... the data that I found coming from, like, the NFL themselves, it was very, like, it was definitely biased, and it was also very, like, recently published because of, like, outside pressure on the NFL to do something about safety, because they hadn't been doing anything about safety.
And I'm sure the people who were doing those biased studies were probably found and paid out by the NFL.
Right. It was extremely difficult
corrupt.
To even find, like, any safety guidelines, like, concrete, like, safety guidelines on the NFL website. There was, like,
that's
all the uniform
crazy.
Stuff was on the
website. Yeah.
But, like, I had to, like, scour for, like, the actual safety guidelines, which is you would think that, you know, with this sport that you'll get into the injuries, but it's like with a sport that's so
that dangerous, has the ability to be so dangerous.
You would think that they'd have more.
That they would really care.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, for example, guardian caps, they're caps that are worn, like, by the players to prevent concussions.
Above their, they're worn above their helmets.
Yes, yes.
And they're supposed to apparently reduce the instances of, like, these small, like, minor, like, head traumas that happen during, like, each play-to-play hit.
Right, right. They weren't even allowed to wear those until the regular season last year.
And that's crazy.
That's insane. Because
what do you mean you're not allowed to? Even now that it's allowed, I mean, I could probably think of two players that wear it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's, like, even when they do wear it, especially by, like, fans and stuff and other players, it's seen as, like, goofy, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they call them, like, oh, big head and stuff. And it's, like, it's the evidence for it is amazing, by the way. Like, it truly does help. It's not some, like, woo-woo thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you want to protect yourself?
Exactly.
Who cares what it looks like?
Well,
you already look a little goofy.
Right.
In your tights.
Exactly. Your stockings that have to be a certain color up to your calf. Like,
right.
Yeah, like, yeah. And so, let's talk about those injuries. Let's
talk
get
about
that.
Those injuries. Yeah. Let's go. Okay. So, obviously, we know that football is an incredibly dangerous sport. I don't think that it can be disputed. I mean, just watching the game, the main goal is to push your body as far as you can through a wall of, like, 6 foot tall, 800-pound men. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think something that's been gaining, I'm going to talk about just a couple of different types of injuries. I mean, truly, there's countless injuries that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But two that have been getting increasingly more popular and also kind of go into the corruption of the NFL and are kind of things that maybe can be avoided are the issues related to traumatic brain injuries and CTE, as well as turf injuries that come through the fact the facet of having turf fields. Okay, so we'll get into CTE.
All right.
And so, just kind of, I don't know, like a medical definition, CTE, otherwise known as chronic traumatic encephalopathy, is basically a brain injury that is caused by repetitive head trauma that injures the brain cells and the blood vessels. And this leads to microscopic bleeding in the brain and abnormal protein deposits, specifically the p-tau protein, which are called tangles. And these tangles end up killing brain cells. And so, looking at the brain of someone with severe CTE, the brain has lost its mass. It's clearly smaller than a normal brain. It has parts of it missing. It almost looks calcified because the protein is depositing.
Yeah.
It's like, devastating.
Right, right.
Like, you can tell so easily. And so, some symptoms of this include memory loss, trouble thinking, trouble organizing, impulsive behavior, aggression, depression, emotional instability, suicidal thoughts, trouble with walking and balancing, also motor neuron disease and stuff. It used to be called punch drunk syndrome, actually, back in the day when it was first discovered. And it originally started being discovered in boxers because they had repetitive head trauma. And then as we got, you know, into, like, the 20th century and things, they started seeing it in football players, also lacrosse player, hockey players. It's also being seen now in military personnel after, I guess, like, head trauma through, I don't know, war. So the biggest thing, I guess, I think for me what's so compelling about this is that it can't be diagnosed when you're alive. The only way to truly diagnose someone with CTE is to look during an autopsy at their brain to look for these protein deposits.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and so I mean, I guess advances are being made every single day mm-hmm. to try and better understand this disease, because obviously it's a, I don't know, it's quite like a prevalent issue, and I think it's getting more popular, and something that's so, like, people are seeing the effects of this in people right now, like, as they're living and talking young players, and so since it's so apparent, I think there's going to be more of a push to kind of, like, talk about it. The NFL has historically had, I guess, like, a lackadaisical response towards it in the past, because it was easier to cover up, but now it isn't, and we'll talk about why. There's been some kind of high-profile cases of people with CTE doing some crazy things, and that's obviously made it harder for the NFL to kind of cover up. But yeah, it is a very serious issue. I'm gonna talk about. Oh yeah, and I know we're talking a lot about the NFL and professional football, but I kind of want to talk about, I guess, high school football as well. And I think it's crazy to think about, like, Pop Warner and stuff, and like, kids are starting to play football so young, especially tackle football. And so I think it's even more important to look at the effects that could happen with kids, because if you're starting it, there's not an age limit to when CTE can affect you. There's there's progressive stages of CTE, and there's also this idea right now that it can affect you at different points in your life. One is usually when people are younger, they've seen it in, like, 20-year-olds, but that's also just because that's who they've been doing research with. You know, there's less cases of people being able to take, like, I guess, data from younger brains. And so that would be, like, I guess, like, the first time that you can kind of tell that someone might have CTE. And then there's also a second stage of it that could kind of infect, like, impact somebody more into their 60s, and that's more like, it shows more of that kind of, like, dementia like or Parkinson's like disease.
But at that point, like, it's too late.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, like, it's starting to impact kids, and once you have CTE, there's medications that you can take to control things like the suicidal thoughts or maybe the tremors and stuff, but your brain is so damaged, you can't necessarily recover from this. And if there is a chance to recover from this, we haven't discovered it yet, because we don't even know how to diagnose it yet. So it's really crazy. In the case of high schoolers, something that is also kind of crazy is this thing called second impact syndrome. And essentially what this is, and I kind of want to talk about this because I think it rang true for my own time in high school. When you get a concussion, if you initially, which, I mean, football players get concussions all the time. It's so common. When you get a concussion, I know that in high school there was a limit. Once you had 10 concussions, you had to quit playing.
10 seems kind of high.
10 is crazy. But yeah, all that to say, second impact syndrome is that when, if you do not let that first concussion heal, if you have another traumatic brain injury or have another traumatic blow to the brain, what can happen is the brain can swell so much that you immediately die. And so this is seen very commonly in high schoolers because, you know, I guess there's kind of less standardization about the level of care that they're receiving. There's less standardization of the care that they're receiving, and I guess it's probably less controlled. And so I guess high schoolers are more likely to go back and play and then die because of it. And so this is also interesting because it shows that you don't have to be a pro to have the effects of brain injury and brain trauma. And you do not have to be a pro to get CTE. And so this brings me to the case of Shane Tamira, okay? And so there's been so many high-profile cases of these football players with CTE, or I guess even, I guess, suspected CTE. We'll talk about some of the living players. But, you know, what my mind first goes to is Aaron Hernandez. Have you heard of him?
Yes.
Yeah, so he, I think, kind of pretty famously went a little crazy committed murder, yes, and they found out that he had CTE. Mm-hmm. There's also so many instances of football players committing suicide. And then later, we found out that they have CTE after kind of taking a look at their brain. And so I chose to talk, I guess, kind of go into more detail about Shane Samira, because it talks about and kind of goes into the fact that this can affect you in high school, but also the fact that this happened pretty recently, actually. It happened this summer. And so this summer, July 28, 2025, mm-hmm, there was a mass shooting in Midtown Manhattan at the building that the NFL headquarters are located at.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The gunman was identified as 27-year-old Shane Samira. He fired an AR-15-style rifle inside of the building, and he killed four people. Samira then committed suicide after barricading himself on the 33rd floor of the building. And so, this New York Police Department source with the investigation knowledge, Samira had a suicide note in his wallet alleging that he had suffered from CTE. He writes in this note, "Study my brain, please. The league knowingly concealed the dangers to our brains to maximize profit. They failed us." And so they did end up looking at an autopsy of him, and he did have low-stage CTE. It cannot be diagnosed when you're living, but you can certainly, I guess, look at the symptoms and kind of make your own assumptions. And right. So he thought that he did have CTE, and he did. And that's another thing I want to bring up, is that he had low-stage CTE. Mm-hmm. He did not have a crazy, severe case of CTE, and it still led him to become suicidal, become homicidal, and eventually carry out a mass shooting, mm-hmm, which was one of the largest mass shootings in New York City since, the 60s or something crazy.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wait, no, since, 2000 or something. Mm-hmm. And so, and Shane Samira, he never played in college. He never played in the professional NFL. Mm. He only played in high school. He was a pretty good player, according to, his old coaches and stuff. But he didn't play professional football. Or think about, my own friends from high school who played football and would often joke about, another concussion. No, that's actually serious. And just because you aren't, I guess, playing against, 30-year-old men, that doesn't mean that there isn't the same risks.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then also relating to the fact that it can affect young people. It's not just something that you see in, these 60-year-old, retired football players. So there was this study done, uh-huh, and it looked at athletes under the age of 30, so particularly young athletes, who had died. And it found that more than 40% of the donors had CTE based on established criteria. And so that's 63 out of the 152 that they kind of looked at. Mm-hmm. And another interesting about this was that the most common death among these athletes was suicide, which, as we know, is a symptom of CTE.
Yeah.
And so this is absolutely crazy to think about. It has major implications for, especially when we look at the fact that CTE, another thing that they're looking at, it's not, I guess, necessarily... Research is still kind of new. I'm sure that a lot of more information will come out in the future. Mm-hmm. But a lot of scientists are starting to believe that CTE is actually caused by not these super traumatic concussions, but these actually subconcussive hits that happen that, in between plays. The ones that... Oh, maybe it'll kind of knock you out a little bit, but you can kind of get up right after and you're not really affected by it. Mm-hmm. And so that's even more scary when you think about the fact that nobody's wearing guardian caps. Mm-hmm. Nobody's caring, okay? If it's not a concussion, if they're not passed out or anything, they probably aren't going to be taken under concussion protocol or asked questions about it. And so, and it's like, not going to be asked questions about it. And we're basically just letting these players who are already, giving up everything to kind of entertain the masses, we're letting them die.
Yeah.
We're letting them, be severely decapitated. The oldest actual football player that's playing right now is 41, mm-hmm, right? And so it's, majority of players retired before then. That's how many years of your life?
Too many.
Right. Honestly. Too many to have cognitive decline in such a dramatic way.
Right.
And so this is crazy to think about. Another common misconception is the fact that NFL players live longer than the rest of the general population. This is something that I know the NFL kind of came out with during some of their studies to try to prove that, you know, the injuries that these players were going through weren't that extreme and that they were fine. But something you need to remember is, number one, where did these studies come from? And number two, NFL players, they're also incredibly rich.
Mm-hmm.
They have their health managed by team nutritionists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's other socioeconomical factors that may play into the fact that they're living longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's important to kind of, when you're looking at NFL players, you have to look at other men in that age range mm-hmm. who are also affluent, pretty healthy, mm-hmm. all things considered. A recent study, 2019 study, found that the average lifespan for a former NFL player is 59.6 years, okay? And compare that to the general male population in the United States, which is 76 years, we can see that the mortality rate for NFL players is actually worse,
mm-hmm.
worse off. And so those studies that we originally thought were true have been debunked.
Right. And those studies, they came from the NFL. Like, they're being produced, by the, like, they're being funded by the NFL because they want to kind of continue to not do anything about the issue, even though they have the money to do so.
Right.
Like, it's just too much of a hassle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing from this study found that the most common cause of death was cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. followed by neurodegenerative conditions, which, you know, dementia, the Parkinson's, CTE of it all. And this is interesting because I think it's also, we all know football players, NFL linemen, right? They're huge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you take a look at the BMIs of NFL linemen, they're overweight per the BMI, which we know that, you know, the BMI might not be the most, like, accurate or, like, whole picture measurement of something. But it's kind of interesting, and I think we can get into it when we talk about, I don't know, ways that we can kind of, like, mitigate these issues in the NFL and change the way that things are happening in order to have, you know, a better environment for these players and have a better environment for people watching football as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, these players are being forced to, like, shove down food and be huge, obviously, because then you're a better player.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also probably contributing to the early mortality as well.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's always been normal grass fields,
mm-hmm.
right, being played, but I don't know, turf became quite popular pretty recently, and this is just, like, artificial grass.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of teams have been switching to turf instead of normal grasses.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of normal grass.
Right.
So 17 teams or 15 stadiums have turf fields, and also 71% of D1 colleges have turf fields, right?
Okay.
And so it's, okay, it's kind of been disputed, especially among, like, players and coaches, that turf fields are, like, worse or they contribute to more injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people have their preferences, but a lot of the times when you see someone coming out with, like, this like a non-contact injury, an injury that isn't from, you know, getting shoved mm-hmm. to the ground mm-hmm. forcefully,
mm-hmm.
it's probably a non-contact injury, and it's probably going to be argued by one of their coaches, right, or one of the managers or anything, or by the player themselves, that it's because of the turf field. So a recent study of the 2021 and 22 football seasons found that NFL athletes were more likely to get injured on artificial surfaces, which is turf, and that artificial turf dramatically increased the likelihood of sustaining a serious injury requiring surgery. And so one of them is obviously turf toe. Do you know turf toe?
No, tell me.
Turf toe is a sprain of the main joint at the base of the big toe. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that as these players, they're, like, taking off, they're running off, their foot, because of the fact of the artificial, because turf, essentially, is concrete mm-hmm. underneath,
mm-hmm.
and then there's, like, layers of, like, this artificial grass and stuff,
mm-hmm.
so it doesn't have a lot of give, and so as they're pushing off, it sprains their toes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And wow. So a player right now that's on injury reserve for turf toe is actually Joe Burrow. Yeah. another very common injury are Achilles tears, which is, of course, the tearing of the Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
And so, just recently, Los Angeles Chargers running back Najee Harris suffered a torn Achilles during a game, which ended his season, which we also saw from the study, mm-hmm. is more likely to happen on a turf field.
Mm-hmm.
40% of NFL players that suffer an Achilles tear mm-hmm. never return to the professional level of competition, which is crazy when we think about the money of it all.
Right. And right, it's completely avoidable because right. they don't need to use the turf fields.
Right. Or at least it can be greatly reduced.
Yes.
And then, of course, we all know the numerous ligaments in your knee that can tear due to non-contact injuries. A recent one, Jaguars rookie Travis Hunter suffered a tear to his LCL during practice. And it was a non-contact injury.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these injuries, I think it's pretty clear that there's evidence that these turf fields increase injuries a lot. Right. You know, so you're like, okay, well, why would the NFL not just have grass fields, right? Because it's obviously better for the players.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would be too expensive to maintain.
How many billion dollars
is
the NFL worth?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they fine players for their...
So they're getting more money from that.
Costumes. There's betting, sports betting.
All of these different
the corners channels. They cut when, like, protecting...
The athletes.
Yet they can't use grass fields.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Food for thought.
Yeah.
I mean, me personally, I love football. I love watching it. I know a lot of people who made football and found a lot of joy in it. And I love sports in general. I don't think that it's fair to tell a bunch of people that they have to stop playing their sports. But I certainly do think that there's things that can be done to make it safer.
Right.
And more ethical in right. general.
Yeah, I think, like, as someone, I don't know too much about football, right? But, like, I can understand football because I'm American.
Yes.
It's everywhere, right? And so there really has to be something done within, like, the NFL, and not just the NFL, but across, like, football spheres in general, like,
even college, going down to
college and high school, to find a way to protect these players, right? Because, like, they're human beings at the end of the day, right? And like, we can't be ruining a kid's life.
Right. Especially because the percentage of, I don't know, like, high school players that end up going to the pros is so small.
Right.
Like, it's something less than 1%.
Right. And it's like, I feel like, we can say, like, oh, well, this needs to be changed and stuff. But, like, football, American football is just such a complicated and it's so intertwined into... like our world, like there's no, it's fairness. There was a lot of things that, like, I learned about just the nasty, dirty sides of the NFL.
Yeah, me
that
too.
I think were really important for the general public to understand and right. to know. But yeah,
I think we can definitely start by revoking the NFL's nonprofit status.
Yes.
There's also there's been kind of innovations happening currently that are starting to be able to create helmets that can record every sub-concussive hit. Okay. And that can kind of lead to the fact that, yeah, we can't kind of prevent those hits. NFL, like, football is a violent sport inherently.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop them, but once you kind of notice that it's been happening to maybe, like, a specific player, maybe that's kind of means for them to kind of be benched for a little bit or something, you know. There's also cause to kind of put in a weight limit in the NFL because we did see, you know, these linemen, they're overweight compared to, like, based off of the BMI, main cause of death, cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
Again, everyone's slimming down. It would be less I guess, like, violent hits because, right, they're, you know, the mass won't be there to move the mass. Right. So it would ultimately lead to a more safer environment, and these men would have, they won't have to eat 4,000 calories a day anymore to kind of sustain that lifestyle.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a problem. Like, this does not have to, like, they don't need to go to war every Sunday.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't need to be all or nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think that once we start understanding that, then a lot of the issues with football can start getting resolved. Or at least we can start making a path towards solving those issues. Yeah. With that being said, we'll see you in the next episode.